Thinking about joining us in Indianapolis for the Gospel Coalition's 2024 Women's Conference? The regular rate price of $259 goes up to $299 on May 8th. This is your final chance to save on your registration. Join us June 20th to 22nd to feast together on the words of Jesus with keynote messages from Jen Wilkin, Melissa Kruger, David Platt, and more, and featuring worship music led by Shane and Shane. Sign up before the price increases on May 8th at tgcw24.org.
September 16. 2 Samuel 12. 2 Corinthians 5. Ezekiel 19. Psalm 64 and 65. In Nathan's dramatic confrontation with King David, 2 Samuel chapter 12, the prophet's courage was mingled with a formidable sagacity. How else could a prophet grab the attention of an autocratic king and denounce his sin to his face, apart from this oblique approach? Certain features of this chapter must be reflected on. First, the fundamental difference between David and Saul is now obvious. Both men abused power in high office. What makes them different is the way they respond to a rebuke. When Samuel accused Saul of sin, the latter dissembled. When Jonathan questioned Saul's policy, a spear was thrown at him. By contrast, although Nathan approaches his subject obliquely, the sin is soon out in the open. "You are the man," verse 7. Yet David's response is radically different. "I have sinned against the Lord," verse 13. That surely is one of the ultimate tests of the direction of a person's life. We are a race of sinners. Even good people, people of strong faith, even someone like David, who is a man after God's own heart, cross-reference 1 Samuel chapter 13, verse 14, may slip and sin. There is never an excuse for it, but when it happens, it should never surprise us. But those who are serious about the knowledge of God will in due course return with genuine contrition. Spurious converts and apostates will string out a plethora of lame excuses, but will not admit personal guilt except in the most superficial ways. Second, only God can forgive sin. When he does so, sin's proper punishment, death itself, is not applied. Verse 13. Third, even when sin's ultimate sanction is not applied, there may be other consequences that cannot be avoided in this fallen and broken world. David now faces three of them. 1. That the child Bathsheba is carrying will die. 2. That throughout his lifetime there will be skirmishing and warfare as he establishes his kingdom. 3. That at some point in his life he will see what it is like to be betrayed. Someone from his own household will temporarily seize the throne, exemplified by sleeping with the royal harem, verses 12 and 13. Each is piquant. The first is bound up with the adultery itself. The second is perhaps a hint that the reason David was tempted in the first place was because he had not gone forth to war along with Joab, but had stayed home, chapter 11, verse 1, clearly longing for peace. And the third treats David to the betrayal that he himself has practiced. Fourth, David's response to the most pressing of the judgments is altogether salutary. God is not the equivalent of impersonal fate. He is a person, and a person may be petitioned and pursued. Despite his massive failure, David is still a man who knows God better than his numerous critics.